Good day and welcome to The Hours. I'm Tyler. We've got my savvy coaching teammate, Claire, here. I'm rocking a new Savvy Coaching sweatshirt. You too can get the Savvy Coaching tree. It's a beautiful tree because it's not about the fruit, it's about the root. Get that at our gear store. You can check it out. We'll put a link here in the show notes to our Savvy Coaching gear store. It's cozy, it's comfy, it's a talking point. Claire designed the logo. Claire, what do you want to add about that?
Everybody needs it. Who doesn't love trees? If you don't, okay, maybe don't buy it, but it's
who doesn't love trees? That's a good small question. Who doesn't love trees? Have you ever met someone that's like, man, I just dislike trees?
No, that would be shocking, controversial. It'd be a hot take, and I would love to hear their reasoning.
The only a friend recently said, I don't like trees that don't bear fruit. They actually said that, and that was not even a connection back to this. They're like, yeah, just trees that, like, I would rather just have fruit trees. I want to be able to eat the fruit off of trees. So I'm like, well, it provides shade, maybe, you know. And but they're like, nope, I only want
carbon dioxide
fruit, right? I only want trees that provide me edible fruit, which I get. I mean, I love me some good fruit. So here's a small question. All right, Claire, what fruit do you look for in a good coach? So, you know, just to kind of frame this, right, there's all sorts of things that lead to the bearing of good fruit. You know, good fruit that is usually a sign of deeply rooted in your beliefs, establishing standards and structure. That would be, you know, your trunk, right? And then having systems in place, that would be your branches. And when your systems receive, you know, great environment, water, sunlight, right, inputs and nutrients, it's then going to bear fruit. But most often the fruit that is most readily visible is your record. Did you win? Are you winning? Right? Do you have good players? People just see that and they're like, oh, the fruit must be a good coach. Whereas I tend to look for fruit that is a sign of deep root, clear standards, effective systems. And it's usually a different type of fruit because you can artificially produce wins by going out and recruiting. But that's all framing for the question. Small question. Maybe it's the big question. I don't know. What fruit do you look for if you're like, hey, this is a savvy coach or a good coach?
I mean, I was ready to answer banana before I heard the rest of the questions. So, any coaches with bananas, I'm ready to be on their team. But in terms of fruit, savvy fruit, I'd go joy. Joy, I feel like, points to a lot of other things. Like, they do have roots that are rooted in not just the wins. Like, they're there for a reason and they're connected to their why, which makes them more joyful in just whatever they're doing. They're happy to be there. They're there for a deeper reason. And it's just fun to be around. Like, they want to be there, and that can lead to patience, that can lead to kindness, that can lead to lots of the other fruits of the spirit. But yeah, if a coach is joyful, I know something is going right there.
Yeah. And coaches, your team is a reflection of you. So the fruit that your team displays is a reflection of your leadership. Right? Where did you plant the tree? What type of tree are you planting? What standards are you upholding? What systems are in place? So, you know, the S in savvy stands for simplicity wins. And one simple thing that wins is what Claire said. It's joy. Synonyms for joy would be spirit, would be excitement, would be enthusiasm, would just be a zest for what you're doing. A joyful team is a byproduct of a joyful coach. I have never seen a joyful team and a coach that is angry and frustrated and negative. I just have not seen that. And so I would say that is a fruit of a savvy coach, is a joyful team. You know, so do you want to get real specific with this? Yeah, we said this many, many times on The Hours. A quiet gym is a losing gym. If your voice as the coach is the loudest voice in the gym, and if your voice is predominantly negative and correcting and angry and frustrated, you will not have a joyful or a spirited team. And so that is a fruit of a savvy coach. That would be one fruit. Let's go two each. Claire will popcorn. I'll go ahead and do mine next. Care. I would say a team that has high care is the sign, is a fruit of a savvy coach and a great leader. Now, care can be interpreted in many, many different ways. And I'm going to maybe take it in a way that's not traditional. So yes, we care for each other relationally, but that's not the specific fruit that I'm suggesting. I'm talking about the care that is a ridiculous attention to detail, realizing that how you do anything is how you'll do everything. Indicators of care would be, how does your team leave a bench or a locker room when done? Do you as a leader care about that small thing? And therefore, do you as your players care about that small thing? Another indicator of care is turnovers, right? Like a program that has great care over the small things tends to turn the ball over less. They show great care in their footwork, so there's less travels. They show great care in making short, sure passes, so there's less deflections. They show great care in how they get powerful when grabbing loose balls instead of dribbling them, getting powerful at the end of drives, getting powerful with rebounds. You can tell that there has been care into how we catch, start, stop our drives, care. Whereas teams that just play with a sloppy approach and they don't show care in the small things, you can tell that is not a program that is producing fruit. There's very, very talented teams. I think of many, many AAU teams that have incredibly talented individual players, but this AAU team or program or coach don't show great care. And so that is not the sign of a savvy coach, and they won't ever do anything incredibly special and great beyond accumulate talent. So that'd be my first indicator of a fruit that shows me a coach is savvy.
I'd eat that fruit. Yes, please.
Eat that fruit. It's care fruit.
It's care. I would go self-control for my second. And by that, I mean responsiveness instead of reactiveness. It's care as well, in just like what you say, how you respond, how you act. And similarly, you can't give what you don't possess. I always find it interesting when coaches who shout and scream and get mad at the refs and, you know, get on their players at the slightest mistake are then frustrated when a player gets frustrated with something that has happened in a game, in a practice, in a result, in a shot not going in. If you don't have self-control, very hard for your players or your tree to bear that same fruit. Whereas when coaches have a plan for their substitutions, that is self-control. We're not just pulling somebody because of one thing that happened. There's a plan in place. I'm responding based out of the standards we've set, based out of the expectations that have been communicated. And that goes for practice, that goes for games. It flows from the players or from the coach into the players, being responsive as opposed to reactive. Self-control, savvy coach.
Lastly, for me, and I'm just going to use one of our standards at Savvy. It's the A in Savvy. It's adversity. And it's very much, all of these are very related for sure. You know, as Claire talked about response instead of react, but the A is adversity. What's your fruit in adversity? And adversity is any sort of a challenge or obstacle, tough situation. One of our coaches recently told me that their most talented player, who was coming back from academic suspension, first game back, was fired up, wanted to perform very, very well. They were playing a rival, and they were down at halftime. And their best player came into the locker room and started trying to motivate their teammates by screaming at them and taking a very aggressive stance. And then one of the other players said, hey, this isn't helpful. They got into it, and it resulted in this best player punching a locker and fracturing their hand because they cared so much but didn't have the fruit of how they should express that care in light of adversity. It's really easy to have joy before you've lost the game, right? It's really easy to care about the small things when you're preparing with the hope for success, right? It's thoughtful and admirable to prepare your response in advance. But when you get punched in the mouth and you hurt, when you're on a losing streak, when all of your best laid plans go to crap, which will happen when coaching, how then do you act in the face of adversity? That is a fruit of a savvy coach and a savvy program. And, you know, you can prepare all you want, but when the bad things happen, everyone's going to look to you as a coach. How do you respond? When refs are giving you terrible calls, when there's really, really nasty things being said from the opposing fans in the stands, when you lose a really, really close game, when you get a nasty letter from a parent of a player that's not playing as much as they think, how do you respond in adversity? Character is better caught than taught. Like, you can say all these things, but what do they actually see in those moments? And that, I think, is the fruit of a heart state of a savvy coach. And I remember that was absolutely modeled for me and was one of the things that I adjusted and adopted throughout my life journey. Is I've always been very, very attracted to leaders who, in the face of adversity, show a stoic approach, a long-term approach, and show care for the individuals that they're leading more so than the outcome of any specific scenario or situation. So adversity, I think, is a fruit of a savvy coach.
Yeah, that's really, really well put. And I think is honestly the key to why we included the roots in that logo and why they're not just present, like they are prominent. They are as big, if not bigger, than the branches, than the trunk, than the leaves, than the fruit. Like, none of that is possible or sustainable without the deep roots, the deep connection to those values and the heart state that you're talking about. Like, that, it's essential. The roots are essential to have any of that fruit be long lasting or juicy.
Yes. Okay, that's beautiful. You're going to laugh at this, Claire, but three things, three specific ways that you can develop this fruit. I hope that anyone listening to this or watching this, and thank you for those of you that are listening or watching, we've seen growth in that, and that's encouraging to us, and it inspires us to continue to hopefully provide and add value on these conversations and invest our time and energy and resources into putting this out into the world. So thank you. The greatest way that you can show your support would be to share it with somebody. If it helps you, it'll probably help somebody else. And so please do share this podcast wherever you're listening or watching it. Please share it with somebody that you think it might help. Okay, three practical ways for you to develop this fruit. And I'm gonna say you can develop this across all of the qualities that we suggested, but I'm gonna hone in on this first one, specifically to the adversity piece. Do hard things. The more that you intentionally do hard things in the smallest of ways, the more prepared you will be to react in the largest of ways. What is an example? One hard thing is just to get up earlier and do a morning routine, right? Every time that alarm goes off every morning, we all feel it. I felt it this morning. What do we want to do when that alarm goes off? We want to sleep longer. We want to hit snooze. And so even in that smallest of ways, instead of hitting snooze, just get up. And you build your muscle and your strength of handling adversity, right? Morning routine. I'd love to just sit and just drink my coffee. You know, I just want to do that, right? I don't want to do push-ups, right? Or I don't want to go and, you know, I don't want to go and intentionally read my 20 minutes. It's hard. Every morning it's hard, right? But the more you choose to do the hard thing, right, you do it. And then it will become a habit more and more. So that would be my first very specific and small thing, would be like, do hard things. Remind yourself of your why. So when you're thinking of care, when you're thinking of adversity, when you're thinking of developing your response, when you're thinking of great energy and joy, there's many, many times where you're not going to feel joy. There's many times where you're going to want to react to share Claire's to. There's many times where you're going to, you're not going to handle adversity well naturally. There's many times where you just don't want to exercise a great deal of care on a small thing like sweeping the floor before your practice. Anytime that you are reluctant to display those fruits, get more deeply rooted in your why. You don't feel joy, why do you coach? It'll remind you to display joy, right? When you are hit with adversity and want to quit, why do you coach? Or why are you doing this thing? And it will remind you. Last night, I'd had a very long day. You know, my wife's going through some health things, and I was supposed to take my daughter, Charlie, to a little academy training session late at night. And I did not want to, right? And I did not feel the energy for it. But then I reminded myself, like, why did I even start this local, you know, basketball academy? So I would spend more time intentionally with my daughter in the thing that she's passionate about. That's why I did it. And so instead of looking at like, okay, here's 2.5 hours of an evening when I'm tired, where I have to go drive to and from and, you know, teach some really young, inexperienced players basketball. I said, oh, you know, why I did this was to spend time with my daughter. And that's 2.5 hours I get to spend with my daughter. And then my 5-year-old son wanted to come. I'm like, okay, what a great opportunity to spend 2.5 hours with them. And so it allowed me to operate with a greater degree of joy than if I just focused on the inconvenience or how I felt. So remind yourself of your why will allow you to operate in a fruitful manner.
Beautiful. I agree. I'm gonna do hard things. And that reminds me of my why. I'm gonna have so much fruit. All right, last one, third one would be related to reminding yourself of your why, but zooming out and having a system of reminders. So first of all, what fruit are you trying to grow? If you don't know that, then you might end up with anything. Like some weeds might get in there. Who knows what you're going to end up with. So what fruit are you trying to grow? Then do your assistant coaches know? This is the system part, system of reminders to zoom out and be reminded of that. It's like, do your assistant coaches know that? Does your spouse know that? Is it posted visibly somewhere? Like if these things aren't happening, it's a lot less likely that that fruit is going to get watered, is going to get nurtured, is going to grow into what you want it to. All of those things can at least give you some perspective. Is it part of your routine? So whether it's the do hard things, it's part of that routine, or is it just part of your weekly schedule in practice to check in with a buddy, whether that's players or you with an assistant coach, like how are we working in this fruit? How has this fruit grown in our practices, in how we're showing up? If you don't have that system, it's easy to forget and get caught up in all the little things. So yeah, keep it present, keep it focused, keep it front of mind, and have support in that.
You know, here's what I often find on these episodes of the hours. They're good hours for me too. You know, so we got a message in our paid coaching community that's exclusive to our paid members that we're mentoring and coaching and working with all the time. And he said, I need more. But yeah, basically he's like, I need more hours. Can you record more of the podcast? And it really encouraged me. And I just want to, you know, communicate to everyone listening, like, these are good hours for me as well. I need these reminders. These are conversations that when you develop relationships with greater minded people than you, they continue to call you to your best self and encourage you to be better. And so that's why we actually started this, is like, hey, we can't actually spend, you know, daily life in person with all the coaches that we're mentoring, but this is some hours we can spend with you. So they're beneficial to me as well. So Claire, thank you for that. Let's go ahead and transition to some mailbag stuff. If you're not a part of our free community and you are listening to the hours, what you need to do right now is click the link below or just navigate if you're listening to savvyfree.com, and you can join over 2,500 coaches that are having conversations like this, how to become a more savvy coach. And, you know, savvy coach, it doesn't mean you have to run a certain system. It just means you have a certain approach that you care about these sort of fruits. Come join immediately. You can check out a bunch of our free resources in there, get plugged in. You can purchase courses in there if you want as well. So we pull some questions from there. And then coaches that really want to go deeper with us and want us to coach them up on a day-to-day basis, want access to all of our courses, they join our paid community. And you can check that out as well at savvycoach.com, or you can click on the link below. So first question is this: lock left adjustments versus non-shooters. This is a coach that's in our paid community asking, like, all right, what adjustments are you making against teams that can't shoot well or only have one shooter? So let me just zoom out. And the intent of lock left is to limit the amount of adjustments that you make initially when you implement the system. Step one for any team to be successful on defense is to have an unshakable identity, where they have habits that are automatic. And the goal with lock left is we don't adjust for player types. We don't adjust for, you know, what another team does well. That's your first step in establishing a lock left identity. And that usually takes an entire season. So if you're in stage one, the implementation stage of lock left, don't make any adjustments for non-shooters. We want to make every catch a dribble, regardless of if they're a shooter or not, and every dribble a pass, regardless if they're a good finisher or not. We don't make any adjustments. Now, if you're in year two or three of lock left and you're getting into, you know, the later stage of your season, and you coach a team where you really, really care about winning varsity and above, a competitive team, well, then if you have a non-shooter, I would probably still try to make them dribble, but I would just adjust the proximity of your close off, right? Close off, meaning we'll get them off the 3-point line. So if someone's a non-shooter, they don't want to shoot, they want to dribble. So you can make them dribble by not getting as close to them. And so that's the adjustment I would make, right? You don't have to get as close to them to make them dribble, but you still want to make sure that they dribble to the left.
So this is from the free community. So I'm in there every day chatting with coaches, seeing what they need. And this question was about spacing. So spacing specifically for younger players, if your players can't shoot threes, if they're very much like even second graders, right, all the way up, we get this question with eighth graders as well, even high school students who just aren't shooters or don't even have the strength to reach the rim. Should we still keep that spacing? Quick answer, yes. Spacing is not just for shooting. And I would say not even primarily for shooting. It is to create room for others. And that's even just a lesson for some players to get in their heads. I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for my team. So if you're spaced well, even if you can't shoot a three, that creates room for somebody to hunt. That creates room for you to get some speed on a cut that you're making. That creates space and time to read the defenders and take advantage of them. You can even get even better stampede catches. Like if you're catching it a step outside the three, you can't shoot that, but you might be able to get some momentum going downhill. So yes, absolutely. Keep the space, hold that space, and they will learn. Even if you end up chucking up some air balls, you get to work on rebounding. They get to practice power generation. So tons of benefits outside of shooting more threes.
I love that. Okay, here's the next one. Shooting ladder for youth. A shooting ladder basically tests players and then puts them in an order based on the results of a shooting test. That's what a shooting ladder is. And the intent of a shooting ladder is to create a competitive cauldron that inspires players to try to get better faster because they want to move up versus their competition. And so the concern with this coach was, hey, it might make youth players feel bad if they are not as good as someone else. I would say this: the earlier you can keep it real with players, the earlier that you can tell players the truth, the better. You know, players will ask you themselves, whether they know it or not, players will ask themselves three questions before they really allow you to coach them. All right. Do you care about me? Can you help me? And can I trust you? And as long as their answer to those three things is yes, you can share results with them very, very transparently. Do you care about them? Can you show that you actually care about them? Can you show that you have something that can help them, right? Can you help them move up the shooting ladder, right? And can they trust you? I think is directly related to how often you tell them the truth, right? If I'm like, oh, Claire, yep, you know, keep shooting, you're doing great. But then I don't play you, that actually erodes trust. What builds trust is, Claire, the shortest path for you to play in more is for you to move up the shooting ladder. Then Claire can trust me, as long as when she moves up the shooting ladder, she does get more opportunities to shoot. So I actually think that shooting ladders build trust as long as you are open and transparent about the process. Like it, and it's not subjective, it's objective. Claire made 5 and Tyler made 3, right? It's just, it's objective. And so Claire is a better shooter than Tyler right now. And so Claire is going to get to shoot a little bit more because she's a better shooter.
Yeah. I think that's helpful with parents as well. Like very helpful for players and you're dealing with them more often, but we know that parents at every age from 3-year-olds all the way to 23-year-olds are involved in these conversations at some point. And if you have objective information, statistics, things to back up your decision, it's very hard for a parent to then go, well, you're not playing them because you don't like them. You're not letting them shoot because whatever reason they've made up in their head because they believe in their child. So having that to back up your decisions is really helpful as well.
Beautiful. Okay. We're glad that we were able to share some answers to your questions. Keep them coming. Join our free community. And we hope that at some point when you really want to invest in becoming a savvy coach, you might join our paid membership. I mean, that's where we're training coaches to really become masterful in what they do. All right. Let's talk about the game of the week. So the game of the week is butt ball. Game of the week is butt ball. And I love butt ball because it just creates a small advantage for the offense so that they can learn how to turn that small advantage into a big advantage. Butt ball is a one-on-one game. And especially at lower levels, or if you really want to teach them to play in dominoes, dominoes is what we call an advantage catch, it creates that advantage because the defense is out of legal guarding position. So you just play this one-on-one from any area on the floor, and the defense, instead of a traditional guarding position where they're facing the ball handler, they will actually turn around and face the basket. The ball will be placed by the offensive player at the small of the back, just above the butt. That's why we call it butt ball. Defense is starting playing defense with their butt. When the ball comes off the body and it's live, you just say, okay, how many dribbles, how many shots? I like to say 2 dribbles, 1 shot in butt ball. You might give 3 dribbles, 1 shot if you're playing from a 4-point line or if you have a really, really young and small player. And the offense then can attack left, right, shoot, whatever. And it really just creates, as the defense has to guess and turn around, it creates that small advantage. It causes players to play with advantage because the inherent butt ball is we only want you to attack when you have an advantage. If you have no advantage, meaning the player was in a legal guarding position and stationary, we actually want you to run an action. We don't want you to attack from neutral. So it also just inherently creates that understanding that there's 2 phases of offense. There's advantage and there's neutral. We only attack when we have an advantage. We don't attack when we're neutral. That's butt ball. It's pretty simple. We played it from 15 feet last night and players got better.
All right. Teach better time. Here we go. This is related, as many things are, to one of the fruit pieces, to doing hard things, to embracing the fact that adversity strengthens. Coaches, you need to be a beginner. Be a beginner, remind yourself of what that feels like, because your players are going through that constantly. They are learning. They are getting uncomfortable. They have to perform, but also be not attached to outcome. We are expecting all of these things from them. And it's easy for us coaches to forget what it's like, what it feels like to be new at something, to be getting something thrown at you that you don't feel confident in yet. And so whether that is trying something new in practice or reading a new book or going to a workout class that you've never done before, try something new so that you're put back in that place of being humbled, of having to learn. And it's a skill. Learning is a skill. And so the more you practice that, that is going to transfer into other things you do. So even if it's outside of basketball, which I highly encourage, I was just talking to my friend Chad, Tyler, you know Chad, a great mentor, a great coach, a great teacher, and a great human who very intentionally does this, tries new things, and is a great learner. He's going to Columbia next month and is doing Spanish immersion. So I know from a fact, language learning, very uncomfortable. You have to not be good at something and try it to get better at it. So yeah, coaches, try and get out of your comfort zone, be a beginner. Not only will it build humility, it'll build empathy in you for your players, but also build confidence because you get to know and build trust in yourself that, hey, I did this thing that I wasn't good at. It wasn't the end of the world, whether I became good at it or I just strengthened my resolve and strengthened my resilience. Those are all good things that are going to make you a better coach. And I would argue a better person.
I love it. And it all comes back to the fruit that you value. So well said, Claire, as always. Thank you guys for spending the hours with us. Claire, thanks for jumping on. It's always a pleasure to get to spend time with you. We were talking about how we needed to spend a little more time together on this trip. So I'm glad we just did it publicly here recorded. As always, I'm Tyler. This is Claire. We are Savvy Coaching. This is The Hours. And until next time,
stay savvy.